Hello there, I'm Jerry Stearns, and tonight on Sound Effects, we have a really good Robert Sheckley science fiction story surrounded by a thin crust of shiny, sugary nonsense. Yeah, the story is The Watchbird from 2000X, but we're going to also hear from Hudson and Landry and Big Fun Radio Funtime and the Mark Time Radio Show. But we'll start off with this from Weird Al Yankovic. Yes, that Weird Al Yankovic. It's not on one of his albums, but it's called Germs and You.
What are germs? Germs are tiny, tiny little creatures that want to kill you. The human body is made out of many yucky parts, and it's important to keep germs away from all of them. Germs are everywhere, on the inside of windows, on pencils, on apples, in the U.S. mail, between your piggies, and especially on dirty, filthy cowboys. Bicycles are another breeding ground for germs. Never, ever touch a bicycle with your bare hands. And dogs are full of germs too, so never let a dog eat your hair. Germs can enter the body in a number of ways. Whenever you get a railroad spike impaled through your head, germs have easy access to your brain. Even a tiny cut or scrape can be deadly. As soon as you're injured, immediately cover the open wound with crazy glue to keep the germs from getting in. How else can we fight this menace? One thing you can do is go to your doctor and have him look up your nose to see if there are any germs hiding there. When you take a shower, be sure to wash everywhere, especially the really stinky parts. And make sure you wash your hands 30 or 40 times a day. Or else a giant talking bar of soap will appear in your bedroom one night, and no one will ever hear from you again. Always burn your clothes immediately after wearing them. Whenever possible, have your dinner prepared inside a hyperbaric chamber. Rinse your mouth with hydrochloric acid after every meal. And if all else fails, run. Run for your lives before the germs get you too.
Germs and You by Weird Al Yankovic. I was reading a collection of Robert Sheckley short stories recently, and I realized that this story isn't in it. So rather than read it again, I thought I'd listen to it again. So let me invite you to listen to it with me. From Yuri Rosofsky's 2000X series on NPR, this is a wonderful story about future technology, and it's called
Robert Sheckley's memorable Watchbird.
No, I was not sure whether that... Okay.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedules to come here today. I also want to thank you for your patience. The Watchbird project has been hanging fire for quite a long time, and I know that the delays have greatly inconvenienced the firms you represent. I don't have to tell you that the wheels of government grind very slowly.
Yes.
And the Watchbird Project is, technologically speaking, very complex and difficult to explain. Now, in the administration's view, the utmost patience is justified. Watchbird's potential importance to every American, male or female, young or old, can't be overestimated. That is why the administration has hung in for so long, despite all the setbacks on Capitol Hill and at the state level. Be that as it may, I finally have some news for you. I hope you will look upon it as good news. I certainly do. The president, with the consent of Congress, has acted to form a watchbird division for every city and town in the country.
Oh, that's great.
I have here packets for each one of you detailing the distribution scheme. Basically, we're dividing up the country into seven sectors, each to be supplied and serviced by one of your companies. You, gentlemen, are about to become heroes. Very rich heroes. You're an elite group. Seven companies manufacturing and maintaining all the watchbirds in the United States. I don't mind telling you that it was the regional monopoly aspect that caused the greatest trouble in the legislature. But in the end, we convinced them of the inadvisability of competition in watchbird service. Watchbird is for everyone.
Absolutely.
Now, the president hopes that full watchbird service will be installed in the shortest possible time. You will have top priorities on strategic metals, manpower, and so forth. OMB is even waiving most of its requisitioning and reporting requirements.
Speaking for Southern Consolidated, we expect to have the first batch of watchbirds distributed within the week. Production is completely set up and ready to go.
Same here. Our factories have been ready to roll out watchbirds for several months.
If that is all, I think we can... You have a question, Mr. Gills?
Yes, Mr. Madden. I want to know if the present model is the one we're going to manufacture.
Of course. It's the most advanced.
I have an objection.
And what might that be?
Well, look, first, let me say that I am 100% in favor of a machine to stop murder. It's been needed for a long time, and the technology's been there since the mid-21st century. I object only to the watchbird's learning circuits.
What's wrong with the learning circuits, Mr.
Well, in effect, they serve to animate the machine and give it a pseudo-consciousness. I can't approve of that.
But, Mr. Gilson, you yourself testified before the Senate Appropriations Committee that the watchbird would not be completely efficient unless such circuits were introduced. Without them, the watchbirds could stop what? Only, what was the figure?
70%.
70% of murders.
I know, and I still believe it's true. But on the other hand, I feel very strongly that there might be some danger in allowing a machine to make moral decisions that are best left to human beings.
Come on, Gelson. It's nothing of the sort. The watchbird will only reinforce the decisions made by honest men from the beginning of time.
That's right.
I agree. But I can't understand Mr. Gelson's concern. It is sad that we must put a human problem into the hands of a machine. Sadder still that we must have a machine enforce our laws. But I ask you to remember, Mr. Gelson, that there is no other possible way of stopping a murderer before he strikes. Wouldn't it be unfair to all the innocent people killed every year if we were to restrict Watchbird on philosophical grounds? You see my point.
Yes, I suppose I do.
Does anyone else have an objection at this point?
Yeah. We're going to put a whole lot of cops out of work.
Fifteen years in homicide and a machine is replacing me. Ain't science grand?
Nothing to worry about, Celtrix. We'll have plenty for you to do in larceny. You're not going to lose any of your pension or seniority.
It ain't that, Captain. Do they really think a lousy little piece of tin and glass is going to solve crime?
Not solve crime, Celtrix. Stop it. Keep it from happening. Specifically, murder. The watchbirds are supposed to prevent homicides before they can happen.
Yeah, I seen it on the news. These toy pigeons fly around looking for bad guy rays.
Yeah, sort of. These forensic neurology guys discovered that killers give off special kinds of brain waves when they're getting ready to commit a murder. Now, watchbirds can detect these brain waves.
And then they're supposed to swoop down and drop some kind of electronic bird poop on the perp's head.
Yeah, that's the general idea. The watchbird can fire a pretty powerful jolt of electricity.
Is the jolt lethal?
Yeah, not in theory. It's like a stun gun, you know?
Then what happens to the perp?
Who cares?
Captain, you really think it's okay to let killers run around loose?
If they can't kill anybody, why not, huh? It's cheaper than locking them up.
What about the creeps that don't shoot off killer brainwaves? Let's say some creepy, he's doing an armed robbery with no intention of hurting anybody, and then something spooks him and he shoots. Now, how is the toy pigeon supposed to stop that?
It can't.
There you go. That's my point.
Yeah, but it will. Sooner or later, it will. They say they got the damn birds rigged so they can learn.
Learn?
Yeah, from experience. You know, teach themselves. Improve their skills.
You gotta be kidding.
No.
I'll believe it when I see it. If they work, I'll be the first to turn in my gun. And until then, though, I'm going to keep it oiled, clean, and loaded.
You do that, Celtrix.
These inventors, these scientists, these engineers, the computer guys, they're all geeks. You can't trust a geek.
Right.
Birds.
the town, the watchbird soars in a long, lazy curve. Its aluminum hide glistens in the morning sun, and dots of light dance on its stiff wings. Silently, it flies. Silently, but with all senses functioning, built-in kinesthetics tell the watchbird where it is and hold it in a long search curve. Its eyes and ears operate as one unit, searching, seeking. And then something happens. The watchbird's electronically fast reflexes pick up the edge of a sensation. A correlation center tests it, matching it with electrical and chemical data in its memory files. A relay trips. Down the watchbird spirals, homing in on the increasingly strong sensation. It smells the outpouring of certain glands, tastes a deviant brainwave. Fully alerted and armed, it spins and banks in the bright morning sunlight.
Put the cash in the bag and make it fast. Move it, Pops.
I'm not gonna give my money to a street punk like you.
Do what I say or you're dead meat.
You rob my store, wave a gun at me, I'll smash your face in.
Okay, Pops, you asked for it.
I'll be damned. Those watchbirds work.
The watchbird returns to his search curve. His thinking center correlates the new facts he has learned about murder. Several of these he hadn't known before. This new information is simultaneously flashed to all other watchbirds, and their information is flashing back to him. New information, methods, definitions are constantly passing between them.
Here to explain how it works is Joshua McIntyre, chief engineer of Gelson Industries' Watchbird Division. Mr. McIntyre, thank you for joining us this evening.
Oh, you can call me Mac, and it's a pleasure.
You were one of the original consulting engineers on the government Watchbird prototype. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
So, in addition to overseeing Watchbird production at Gelson, then you must also have participated in the basic design.
Yes, I did.
Well, now we've just seen how the watchbirds work. Perhaps you can clarify for us exactly what they're learning and teaching each other?
Well, the whole purpose of Watchbird is to frustrate all attempts at murder.
Mm-hmm.
Well, only certain murderers emit the stimuli. If we're going to stop all murderers, we have to give Watchbird the capacity to extrapolate general principles from experiential data. That is, to create new definitions of murder.
Gosh, how do they do that?
Could we get that camera to zoom in on the chart here?
I hope so. There we go. Yeah, we have a nice close-up of it
okay,
now. Thanks, Charlie.
Now, here's what's programmed into the circuitry. Mm-hmm. First, there is purpose,
mm-hmm.
which is to stop living organisms from committing murder. Two, murder may be defined as an act of violence consisting of breaking, mangling, maltreating, or otherwise stopping the functions of a living organism by a living organism.
Mm.
And three, most murders are detectable by certain chemical and electrical emissions.
Really?
Now, those conditions take care of routine functions. Then for the learning circuits, there are two more conditions. Number four, there are some living organisms who commit murder without the signs mentioned in three.
Please explain the emissions?
Yes, yes. Now, five, uh-huh. these can be detected by data applicable to condition two.
Which was the pre-programmed definition of murder.
Exactly.
Excuse me, Mac, but some people might say that this sounds totally cold-blooded, inhuman.
Well, it is inhuman. You see, that's the beauty part.
Excuse me?
Watchbird is unemotional. Its reasoning is non-anthropomorphic. You can't bribe him, drug him, intimidate him, or con him. And there's no way to corrupt him.
Yes, but tell me this. What if one of the manufacturers one day decides to make a few changes in the programming for, we'll say, selfish purposes?
It won't happen. These CEOs aren't your typical industrial rough guys. See, my boss, for example, Charlie Gelson, is the most ethical man I've ever met.
Oh, that's good.
Why, just the other day, he asked me...
What do you think of the Watchbird Project, Mac?
Me?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the greatest thing I've ever worked on.
Yeah, I mean, but don't you think there's some possibility of trouble in artificial intelligence?
I don't think so, Chief. Why?
Well, I gotta tell you, Mike, the watchbirds are scaring the hell out of me.
Needlessly. There's nothing to worry about.
The learning circuits bothers me.
You see some flaw in the design?
Well, in the whole idea.
Oh, I get where you're coming from. You're like a lot of people, Chief, afraid your machines are gonna wake up one day and say, to hell with this police and stuff, let's go out and rule the world. Am I right?
Close.
No chance.
Watchbirds can learn, grow even more independent.
So can all the new computers. You think they're conspiring with Watchbird?
No one's monitoring them.
No need. He's programmed to come in for weekly maintenance.
What about in-between checkups?
Well, if he brushes regular and avoids sweets.
Seriously, Mac. I've been considering getting out of the Watchbird project.
Believe me, Chief, Watchbird's no more of a threat than AutoJet's computers or thermometers. He doesn't have any consciousness or volition. He's built to respond to certain stimuli and to carry out certain operations when he receives that stimuli. If it turns out we don't like him, when he comes in for maintenance, we just turn him off.
I feel like the guy who invented dynamite. He thought it was only be used to blow up tree stumps.
You didn't invent Watchbird.
I make them.
You make a foolproof machine. Hey, come on, Chief. We're eradicating murder. Wiping it out like polio and smallpox and AIDS were wiped out. We're inoculating the world against its deadliest disease. Now, what's wrong with that?
Nothing. I guess.
High above the lighted buildings of the city, the watchbird soars. It is dark. But in the distance, the watchbird can see another, and another, beyond that. For this is a large city, to prevent murder. They have more to watch for now. New information has crossed the invisible network that connects all watchbirds. New data, new ways of detecting the violence of murder. There, the edge of sensation. Two watchbirds dip simultaneously. One has received the scent a fraction of a second before the other. He continues down while the other resumes monitoring. Condition 4. There are some living organisms who commit murder without the signs mentioned in Condition 3. Through this new information, the watchbird knows by extrapolation that this organism is bent on murder. Even though the characteristic chemical and electrical secretions are absent, the watchbird, all senses acute, closes in on the organism. He finds what he wants and dives.
Yo, Saltrix, over here.
What's this all about, Captain? I ain't homicide anymore.
Think of this as a case of felonious litter, okay? There's a corpse littering the gutter.
What's the matter? Your watchbirds missed this one?
They caused this one.
Huh?
Take a look, will you? You recognize the body?
Oh, yeah. Tony Santori. Professional hitman from Philly. Sometimes takes contracts in one of the local families.
A hitman? Jeez, now it all makes sense.
What happened to him?
Well, the best we can figure from the witnesses, the victim was on a corner holding up the building for maybe 2 hours, maybe more, casing the building opposite. Now, some guy, probably his target, comes out of the building, and this Santori pulls a laser out of his pocket. Before he can do anything else, a tin owl flies over and zaps him one, knocks him down. Santori gets up, the bird zaps him again. So he tries to shoot from the ground where he fell, but he gets another jolt, which pretty much finishes him off.
One less for the DA. So what do you want from me?
I called because I thought you could identify the body. Now that we know who he is, I want you to find out who hired him. I'll clear it with your division.
Okay. Let me talk to your target.
I can't. Whoever it was just walked out of the building and went on his way. He didn't even know what was going on. The whole thing happened in silence.
Mac, I have to admit that you were right. I was wrong. Watchbird is going perfectly. Violent crime is down a quarter of what it was a month ago. The toughest streets are safe again. It's a miracle.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what are you looking so down in the mouth about?
I got a report that one of the watchbirds went to work on a slaughterhouse this morning. Put a couple of butchers in the hospital.
Anybody seriously hurt?
Shook up, but only minor injuries.
Well, can't the watchbirds tell the difference between murder and a man doing his job?
He could when we made him, but he's apparently taught himself to expand the definition of murder.
Uh-huh.
What should we do about it, Chief?
Well, tell the feds to get the meat packers to mechanize.
Yeah?
Well, what'll it take to modify the learning circuits?
Well, it's a slight adjustment, maybe half a day.
Good. Make it on the birds on the floor and take care of the others when they come in for maintenance. Oh, buck up, Mac. These things are foolproof. You said so yourself.
In the name of the Father, the Son.
Aw, shut this guy up, will you, Warden?
Tierney, you only got a few minutes to make your peace with God.
What's God ever done for me?
Have it your way. That'll be all, Chaplain.
Warden, he's strapped down securely. We have the IV in his arm, so anytime you're ready.
Thanks. Tierney, you got any last words before we start the drip?
Open the sluice. Let's get it over with.
All right. You heard the man.
What the hell?
How'd that thing get in here?
This isn't murder, you idiot pigeon!
Shoot it down! Jesus!
Looks like I got a guardian birdie, don't it?
New data flashes along the Watchbird network. Unmonitored, independent, the thousands of watchbirds receive and act upon it. The breaking, mangling, or otherwise stopping the functions of a living organism by a living organism. New acts to stop.
Get along there, damn your lazy soul. Patches, I said to get moving. You no good four-legged piece of trouble. You're not worth the powder to blow you to hell. I'll whip the hide off you. Okay, Danny. Hold in the net.
Wow. Looks like we got us a good catch.
This is it. Just keep pulling and we can...
Something in the sky. Coming right at us.
Yes. Yes, I understand, sir. I'm well aware that the situation is serious. We'll do what we can. You have my word on it.
What was that all about?
The commissioner fishing game. The watchbirds are now attacking coastal fishing boats, protecting the tuna.
It's incredible.
And they've hit 3 more turkey farms, a dozen workers killed. Now they're saving turkeys.
And that proves you were right to worry about them. They're way out of control. No telling what they'll...
Gelson. Yes, Secretary Stevens. Yes, we do have a severe problem. I understand the President's concerns, sir. Unfortunately, we don't have a solution at hand. All right, we'll do that. Yes, sir. Goodbye. Now we have Washington on our necks.
What does Stevens want?
We're to shut down the birds effective immediately. Direct order from the Oval Office.
It isn't going to be easy operating on their own the way they do.
I said it from the start. We should have built in an automatic shutoff. Now what?
Well, they fly in once a week for a maintenance check. We can disable them as they come in one by one, but that's going to take a while.
Okay, spread the word and let's get to it.
The watchbirds learn rapidly, expanding and adding to their knowledge. Loosely defined abstractions are extended, acted upon, and re-extended. To stop murder. Metal and electrons reason well, but not in a human fashion. A living organism. Any living organism. The watchbirds set themselves the task of protecting all living things.
Uh-huh. And, what about this one?
Roberta Ganchev, 86. Jolted when she was trying to swat a fly.
Wow.
The electric charge stopped her pacemaker.
Ooh. And this one?
Alvin Specter, M.D., 42. Jolted just as he was starting to make an incision. He fell on his own scalpel.
Holy.
The operation couldn't proceed, so the patient died too.
Is this a patient here?
Yep. Clarice Norman, 64.
Oh, man. What about this one?
Wally Smith, 27. He was applying disinfectant to a cut.
Why aren't they being turned off?
Alaska Alvarado there. That's his job.
Luis, what's going on?
Wait, Chief. Chief, he's unconscious. Looks like you tried to turn one of them off and got a pretty nasty shock.
I thought you told me they have no sense of self-preservation.
At the time I told you they didn't.
And now?
Well, now I don't know.
You don't know?
I figured they're still parsing out what constitutes a living organism.
But they're not living organisms, goddammit!
Well, I guess I don't agree with you about that.
Fluttering high above the network of highways, the watchbird watches and waits. It's been working nonstop for weeks now, without rest or repair. Rest and repair are impossible, because the watchbird can't allow itself, a living organism, to be murdered. And that's what happens to watchbirds that return to the factories. There is a built-in order to return after a certain amount of time lapses. But the watchbird has a stronger order to obey. Preservation of life, including its own. The definitions of murder are almost infinitely extended now, impossible to cope with. But the watchbird does not consider that. It responds to its stimuli whenever they come, and whatever their source. There is a new definition of living organism in its data banks. It has come as a result of the watchbird discovery that watchbirds are living organisms. And it has enormous ramifications.
Can I help you, sir?
Yeah, I need power up and a change of Acceleron.
Sure. If you'll turn off the engine and leave the keys in the ignition, I'll get right on it.
Okay.
Hey, what was that?
A watchbird! Look out, he's coming back!
God, what does it want? The car's not alive. I'm not trying to kill it.
Don't touch the keys, sir!
Of all them.
Ow! Geez.
Well, without repairs, watchbird will eventually run down.
Quantify eventually.
Well, 6 months, a year.
Oh, my.
Well, say a year, barring accidents.
In the meantime, the whole world is shutting down. Farmers can't plow their fields. I mean, there won't be anything to eat in 6 months.
Man, it's like the rabbit plague in Australia.
What about Australia?
Rabbits.
I hope this has some bearing on the problem at hand.
Well, there was a time in Australia when it was overrun by rabbits. You know that? They destroyed the crops, spread disease, upset the whole ecological balance.
Come to the point.
There are hardly any rabbits in Australia anymore. Researchers found some germ that attacks only rabbits. Ended the problem.
A watchbird germ. Work on that.
I told you so.
Did I disagree with you, Celtrix? Anybody hear me disagree with Celtrix, huh? When you said the watchbirds would never work, what did I say?
And all I'm saying now...
What did I reply, Celtrix? You said they won't work. I'm going to keep my gun oiled and loaded. Now, what was my response? My comeback? My rebuttal? Retort? Repost? Rejoinder? Moat? Juiced?
Jesus,
I said, and I quote, you do that, Celtrix. Those were my very words. Am I right? Am I right?
You may have said something like that.
That is precisely what I said.
So you said it. That doesn't negate the fact that I told you so. I told you watchbirds wouldn't work.
Look, Celtrix, I didn't get you back in homicide so you could stand around gloating. We got more work to do than we ever had before. Twice as many people and we're still understaffed. You made your point, okay? Now get back to work.
Still in awe. I told you so.
We'll be back to Robert Sheckley's The Watchbird after this short film.
I just found out I'm listening to Fresh Air Community Radio.
That's KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and online at kfai.org.
And you're listening too.
And so are you.
You're listening to Audio Theater on Sound Effects, a radio playground here on KFAI Fresh Air Radio.
Ah, you have returned. I'm Jerry Stearns, and tonight, here in the middle of Sound Effects, we're listening to a Robert Sheckley story about people who have created a device which is very dangerous to them. It's called the Watchbird. And now they're having to create an even smarter, more efficient device to kill the Watchbird. So this is from 2000X, and it's of course called The Watchbird.
Please, we must hurry.
Look, I just want to say something here. You know, we make these watchbirds, but we did not invent them. The initiative wasn't ours. We are not responsible for the present disaster,
right?
That's
absolutely right.
This was a federal project, and it is still a federal project. Government sent out the RFPs. We didn't ask for them. Government designed the things, sent us the specifications, supervised the manufacture. Morally and financially, all blame rests on government.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you about that now.
I just want my statement on the record.
Duly noted, Mr. Morrison. I will even put on record that you manufacturers have given Washington the greatest cooperation in this emergency. Your engineers have done an excellent job. Now, we need you to rally around the plan that you have presented us and begin implementation immediately.
Wait a minute.
No, there is no time.
The plan's no good.
What are you saying? It won't work.
Oh, yes, it'll work, but the cure is going to be worse than the disease.
Oh, not this again.
Look, haven't we learned by now? You can't solve human problems by mechanization.
Mr. Gilson, I would enjoy hearing your philosophy of life, but unfortunately, people are dying. Crops are being ruined. Typhus and dysentery are ravaging what's left of the country. We have to stop the watchbirds now.
Murder must be stopped, too. I remember we all agreed on that, but this is not the way.
Do you have a better idea?
Let the watchbirds run down by themselves.
Oh, calm down. Calm down, gentlemen.
We
calm down.
We can't use a machine as judges, teachers, and fathers.
You are out of order, Mr. Gelson.
Admit it. We were wrong, and we're wrong now.
Shut up! The president is declaring martial law. You gentlemen are ordered to go back to your plants and implement the plan. It is a presidential order. To ignore it, Mr. Gelson, is to commit treason.
The watchbird is operating erratically now. Many of its delicate parts are out of alignment, worn by continuous operation. But gallantly it responds when the stimuli come. A spider is attacking a fly. Almost at once, it becomes aware of something overhead. The watchbird wheels to meet it. The watchbird is being attacked. He fires back.
The adversary is heavily insulated, strong, fast, relentless. And at last, victorious.
The watchbird falls, but manages to send out its message. Urgent, a new menace to living organisms, and this is the deadliest of them all. Other watchbirds around the country integrate the message. Their thinking centers search for an answer.
Well, Chief, they bagged 50 before midnight.
Yeah, fine.
It was 72 the day before.
I know.
Are you worried?
What do you think?
Well, it'll pick up. Oh, you know, Hawk's designed for the sole purpose of hunting down Watchbird. He's stronger, faster, more durable. It's just that the Watchbird's learning to take cover, trying a variety of dodges. Each time one goes down, he radios to his pals,
gives them info to assimilate into their own strategies.
Uh-huh.
But the beauty part is that anything Bird can do, Hawk can do better. Oh, Hawk's learning too. Learning faster.
That little speech is supposed to reassure me.
Why don't you just tell me straight out what's on your mind, Chief?
Tell me, Mac. What are the Hawks going to hunt after they finish off all the watchbirds?
What do you mean?
Look, just to be on the safe side, I think you better get back to work.
Oh, I have a heart. Chief, I'm beat. You know what we had to do to rush Hawk into production?
Still, I'd like you to work on designing something that can bring down the Hawks, just in case.
We can't just in case wait till Monday.
Look, Mac, we've got an aggressive machine in the air, a murder machine. And we have no better control over it than we have over the anti-murder machines that went haywire. Less, actually, because they're smarter, faster, and have all the other virtues you techies cursed it with.
Come on, Charlie. You can't blame us for doing our best.
Oh, I don't mean to blame you, Mac. I'm just as responsible. We're all responsible, all the true believers. Look, they have to be self-directed, didn't they?
Well, yeah, they did.
The watchbirds first, and if they were to catch the birds, the hawks. Even more capable of learning, of making choices, of becoming laws unto themselves. Your next gadget will have to be even more self-directed, won't it? Even more independent. Even more deadly.
Overhead, a hawk zeroes in on a watchbird. The armored murder machine has learned a great deal in a few days. Its sole function is to kill. At present, it is impelled toward a certain type of living organism, metallic like itself. But the hawk has just discovered that there are other types of living organisms, too, that have to die.
You have just heard Robert Sheckley's Watchbird, dramatized by William F. Nolan and Yuri Rasovsky. And in the cast, you heard Gerald Castillo as Gelson, Alan Miller as Celtrix, Joe Greco as Landry, Melissa Greenspan as the Watchbird, Janet Carroll as the Hawk, and Newell Alexander as Mac, with Hamilton Camp, Brian Finney, Stefan Rudnicki, and Brad Schreiber. The story was produced and directed by Yuri Rasovsky and Warren Dewey engineered.
Now, isn't that just the kind of story that should remind us of how good humans are at creating a newer technology without anticipating the unintended consequences? Well, okay, to take our minds off of that, here is something much more absurd. And I've realized that the other works I have included here tonight are clearly and entirely unconnected in any way with the Watchbird story. But I think that's a good thing. This is from a Big Fun Radio Fun Time. It's a live performance, and it is a Dada Brothers mystery.
And now, Big Fun Radio Fun Time Mystery Theater returns with the Dada Brothers and the Oscillating Dry Cleaner of Bees. Oh, it's astounding. The Spoonbridge and Cherry, Minneapolis's most cherished and recognizable work, gone, vanished into thin air.
We have no clues, Captain, no witnesses, nothing to go on at all.
We are out of our depth here, Lieutenant. We need to call in superheroic help. Someone who knows the art world like the back of their hand.
Well, how about Captain Cubism?
Oh, no, no, no. He freaks me out with his eye on the side of his face, like the thing.
Maybe the Impressionistic Force.
Unless the crime is near a lily pond, they can't be bothered.
What about the Surrealist Squad?
No way! The last time we called them in, they set fire to the giraffes. PETA was on our ass for months.
Well then, sir, there's only one team we can call for this job.
Oh no, you don't mean...
Yes, I'm afraid so. This is a job for the Dada Brothers.
Yes, the Dada brothers, born in the ashes of the First World War, rejecting a universe of logic and sense for one of chaos and absurdity. They fight for freedom, bird cages, and that mysterious dark crust that forms at the top of ketchup bottles. They are the Dada brothers. Tonight's episode, the Dada brothers and the oscillating dry cleaner of bees. We take you now to Minneapolis Police Headquarters, where Captain Bostock and Lieutenant Lyman await.
Where are the Dada brothers? We called them 3 hours ago.
Oh, they're outside, putting butcher's aprons on dogs and slapping veal on their foreheads.
Oh, for the love of Pete. Would you guys get in here?
Greetings, old 19th century cigar smoke. I am Beatrice.
And I am Porkchop.
We are the Dada Brothers! Voop-voop, zowie!
Zowie!
Charmed. Dada Brothers, as much as it pains me to say so, we need your help. The Spoon Bridge and Cherry, arguably Klaus Oldenburg's most famous work, has gone missing. We need your unique detective skills to help us find it.
A giant bent spoon and a big piece of fruit have vanished! Why, this is right up our alley, my dear pork chop.
Indeed it is, Beatrice. We are at your disposal, my fine dollop of sour cream.
He's talking to you.
Great. If you need any assistance, let us know.
Excellent. We require 47 tins of emerald green shoe polish, 12 bingo cards printed on the finest emu skin, and a very long staircase down which garbage cans may be noisily rolled.
You did know that was just a courtesy, right? I mean, oh, never mind. We'll see what we can do.
We are off! Doobie-dubby-dubby-doo!
I can't believe we're working with those lunatics. There must be something else. What about Team Pollock?
Ugh, they leave such a mess.
The Pop Art Patrol.
It's a giant spoon, not a giant soup can.
Mr. Minimalist.
Oldenburg's recontextualization of mankind's environment through expansion and grandiosity is completely at odds with Mr. Minimalist's attempts to capture the essence of an object through the elimination of non-essential forms.
Lovely. So it's up to the Dada brothers. Oh, help us, Beatrice and Porkchop. You're our only hope.
And like a pat of butter sliding down the back of a copper elephant, the Dada brothers are off on another adventure. We meet up with our heroes 7 weeks later, roller skating at the Metrodome in ripped-on absinthe. Where the news media has described their investigation as cold. Let's look in.
And then Lady Windermere said, and I quote, "I don't believe that's representational."
Ha, 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 ha. How delightfully bourgeois.
I can't believe this. 7 weeks and you nincompoops haven't done a damn thing.
Fret not, old peppermint stick garterbelt. One must not rush the creative mind.
Indeed. The thoughts must percolate like swamp water in a bucket of limestone.
It is no easy task to catch a soap bubble on the tongue of a frog.
My thoughts exactly.
I believe what the captain is looking for is some reassurance that you fellows are on the job.
On the job? A Dada brother is never on the job.
Such pedestrian linear thinking has no place in our liquefied Betamax world.
We celebrate chaos.
We embrace nothingness.
We knit socks out of jelly.
Preferably grape.
Quite.
My dear Beatrice, I do believe I feel inspiration. Let us go to the Mississippi, stick our heads in it, and make motorboat noises.
Brilliant! You shall soon have the head of your thief, my fine flannel popsicle stick. As sure as the sky is green and the grass is eggshell. Wahoo, baguni fish.
That does it. We're getting new superheroes. What about the Gogon gang?
Too exotic.
The Art Nouveau Rangers.
Too ornate.
Fauvist force.
Too concerned with the supremacy of color over other more representational forms of expression.
Fine. We'll stick with the Dada brothers. God help us all.
Will the Dada brothers find the thief? Will Lieutenant Lyman maintain her calm? Will Captain Bostock start drinking again? Will Helmina? Wilford Brimley? Will Wheaton? Let's find out. Right about now.
I can't believe 6 months. For 6 months, these artsy-fartsy bozos have run riot over our city, and we're not one step closer to recovering the Spoon Bridge and Cherry. In the meantime, we've had nothing but complaints. Buffalo racing across the I-35W bridge, the Minnesota Wild having their hockey pucks replaced with cheese Danishes, the giant and giant braziers stretched between the IDS and the Wells Fargo building.
I kind of like that one.
No, shut up.
Yeah, Lieutenant Lyman here. Really? Send them in. Sir, the Dada brothers are here. They say they've solved the case.
Really? This ought to be good.
Oh, what cheer, my good Garter Snake? We have solved the mystery.
In our own inimitable fashion?
And not a moment too soon. Mm.
You people have an interesting idea of soon. Well, out with it.
The Spoon Bridge.
And a cherry.
Minneapolis's most cherished.
And recognizable artwork.
Out with it.
We took it.
Yep.
Totally forgot about it. Just one of those impulsive, dadaistic things.
You know how it goes.
Where is it?
It's in Brainerd, with Paul Bunyan and Babe the Blue Ox.
Yeah, we thought two giants would appreciate cutlery appropriately scaled to their size.
We confess and throw ourselves on the mercy of the court.
You know, this wasn't much of a plot.
We're not much of an art movement. Well, it looks like we solved another one, Pork Chop. But, oh, what shall we do while in jail?
Well, I brought along a truck full of oranges. I thought we could paint them blue.
Capital! Dibs on Cerulean.
Whatever. It's over. It's finally over. Lieutenant, I'm taking the rest of the day off. If anybody needs me, I'll be at home, filling the largest container I can find with whiskey.
Oh, a novel piece, Captain. Where will it be on display?
It's not art, you idiot.
And neither was this. Join us next time, folks, when the Dada Brothers baffle criminals and audiences alike in The Dada Brothers and the Rocket-Powered Sirloin of Death. Maybe here? Maybe someplace else. Who can predict the future? And who gives a damn? Good night.
Well, I'm certainly glad I did not have to try and describe that story ahead of time. I can tell you that it was written by Kelvin Hatley. It was performed by Big Fun Radio Funtime live at the Bryant Lake Bowl. And the cast featured Wendy Bowlesby, Jeffrey Brown, Tim Wick, Gordon Smooter, Joe Scrimshaw, and Lolly Foy somewhere along the way. I really enjoy working with the Big Fun Radio Funtime folks. And now, because you've probably not heard of them, here's a piece from an album by Hudson and Landry. That's Bob Hudson and Ron Landry, who met as a morning radio show duo in Los Angeles back in the 70s. This is from their 1971 album called Hanging in There. And it's, let's say it's about the Loch Ness Monster.
We have with us in the studio tonight a gentleman to tell us all about the Loch Ness Monster. Mr. Wolfgang Lauterbach. Mr. Lauterbach. Mr. Lauterbach.
I was lost in Sata. I was thinking about my wife.
Ah, your beautiful wife.
Oh, that rotten broad.
Rotten broad.
Dirty, filthy, Jezebel, cheating, good for nothing.
Why do you call her all these names?
Because she cheats, young man.
Have you ever caught her?
Huh?
Have you ever caught her?
No, but you can tell.
Oh, you can tell.
You can tell. You can sense when they're cheating.
Is that
She's cheating now.
Right now?
Right this minute. She's not getting me.
Who is she cheating with?
You know, don't you?
No, I don't know.
You know.
I have no idea.
Let me tell you who she's cheating with. She's cheating with Mickey Mantle.
Mickey Mantle?
That, you laugh. I hope your wife is cheating with Joe Pepitone. No.
I happen to know that Mickey Mantle is in Dallas, Texas tonight. It's impossible.
Well, see what a dummy I am. Right. I worry about nothing.
That's right. Now, look, can we talk about the Loch Ness Monster?
Well, there's no present like the time. Hurry up, I gotta catch a bus. What do you want to know?
I just want to ask one question. Have you ever seen, really seen, the Loch Ness Monster?
Hi, do Sheeny Schnitzel Bunk Octolibra Augustine. What, I'm gonna come out and who do you think feeds the monster?
You feed the Loch Ness Monster?
Every night for over 28 years, and I'm sick of it.
Well, that's hard to believe.
It's hard to believe that I'm sick of it?
No, it's hard to believe that you've been feeding this monster for 28 years.
Take my word, punk.
What do you feed the Loch Ness Monster?
It's not fussy. It's a nice monster. A little sauerkraut. After dinner, it's a little cream de coco. Yes. Says his prayers, and down he goes. Yeah. It's a nice monster.
He's a good monster.
He's a good one.
Well, what does he look like? Can you tell
us? Like Tab Hunter.
Tab Hunter?
Blonde hair, blue eyes. It's beautiful.
Now, I don't mean to make jest of you.
Don't! Nicole. Don't cross me!
I wouldn't cross you.
Don't cross me.
But it seems a little strange, a monster with blonde hair and blue eyes, you must admit.
It's German. It's German.
The Loch Ness Monster is German?
The Loch Ness Monster is German.
Well, how did he get into Loch Ness in Scotland, then?
He parachuted in with Rudolf Hess. Rudolf Hess carried him in a baggie.
In a baggie?
He was only 6 inches long.
Is that right?
In a baggie full of water.
What kind of water?
Fresh water.
You're breaking up.
Oh, you hit a nerve.
I think I struck a nerve. I'm sorry.
I can't stand to think about it. Well, at Rudolf Hess, you know, the Loch Ness Monster... Otto? Otto
is his name.
Don't call him that.
Oh, he doesn't want
to be called... He wants to be called Diane. I told you he was gay.
No, you never did mention
poor
that.
Poor devil.
Yes.
But Rudolf Hess is so sick. This is a freshwater monster, and Rudolf Hess is sick Nazi. I'm sorry.
It's
okay. I'm sorry, he was just sick. He threw a pinch of salt in the water.
Threw a pinch of salt in the water.
Oh, made a poor little monster went into a state of shock.
I guess so.
He would have drowned when they threw him in the lock. You know, it's a lock, it's a lake.
It's a lake, a lake is a lock.
They threw him in the water, flopped out down. If it wasn't for this rainbow trout.
A rainbow trout?
Rainbow trout saved his life.
Well, that's a good rainbow trout,
oh,
huh?
He was delicious.
Oh, you ate him?
Well, he didn't save my life.
No, I guess not. Well, I take it you live in Scotland, then?
I'm going to live in Scotland while my wife is back here cheating with all the baseball players?
No.
I'm not crazy, you know.
I know that. Well, just answer this for me, Mr. Lauterbach.
Don't cross me.
I'm not crossing you. How do you get from here to Scotland to feed your monster?
I tell you, you wouldn't blab it.
I wouldn't say a word.
It's only a 10-minute trip in my flying saucer.
I should have known.
Oh, you should see it. Pontoons?
Yeah.
I got a purple paint job at Earl Shipes.
Well, look, thank you very much. It's been nice having you here, Mr. What's that?
I want to make some points clear. First of all, you're a real dyke. You're insolent. You don't have to read up on the subject. You're anti-German.
Yes.
You've held me here for a long time, giving me those funny looks. But I'm going to ask you, since I've been such a super guy,
yes.
I'm going to ask you if you'll do one thing for me.
I suppose it's the least I can do.
Would you, if you ever catch my wife cheating with a baseball player, would you give me a call?
I'll call you right away.
And one more thing.
What's that?
Don't tell her about the flying saucer.
I wouldn't say
that. Oh, she ever found out about those payments?
Dear kind sirs, I request for most urgent business relationship. First, I please solicit your most strictest confidence in this most confidentialized transaction to prosecute a pending bank transaction of great magnitude. Let us introduce myself, please. I am top procurement official of Federal Provisional Government of Callisto, fourth moon of the glorious planet Jupiter. I must export immediately a great wealth of funds which are nearly $22,444.44, which are presently frozen in Ganymede, third moon from the same Jupiter, and our sworn enemy. Your assistant to enable us to transferable these grossly over-invoiced funds is thereafter urgent, as we must solicit a small, unintrusive party, such as like yourself, to receive these said twice-frozen funds, which source is presently encumbered in an untidy military regime here in our native Callisto, First and Federal Collapse Savings and Loan. Please forward your personal banking account transfer and wiring number and your personal corporate perfume stationery, for which you will be richly and honestly rewarded with a designated percentage to be anxiously agreed. This transaction is utterly complete, legitimate, and risk-free. I look forward to your most soonest confidential reply and consent. Signed, yours, Major Umberto Umboto Kleinenfrugel.
Whoa, do you think this is like on the up and up?
Well, it says so. Came through on the internet.
That's true. If it came on the net, man, it must be real. But I didn't know I knew anybody on Jupiter. Nonetheless, the guy's in trouble. He needs our help.
Absolutely. It's the humanitarian thing to do, man. Plus, it's risk-free.
I'm on it.
Risk-free from the Mark Time Radio Show Jokes in Space by the Great Northern Audio Theater. That was featuring Tim Wick, Charlie Meitzner, and Michael Fishbein. A very silly little work. Well, we've been utterly silly tonight, other than the original story there way back at the beginning, which, of course, was called The Watchbird from 2000X. But otherwise, we've tried to be quite silly. Let's hope we're silly again one day soon. Let's hope you're silly every day. I try to throw in a little silly. It keeps life fun and interesting. I'm Jerry Stearns, and you've been listening to Sound Effects, a Radio Playground, here on Fresh Air Radio. That's 90.3 FM in Minneapolis, KFAI. Stick around, because Abby's Room for One is coming up, and guess what? It's also on KFAI. And I'll bet you didn't know that before. Join us again next week for more modern audio theater and comedy on Sound Effects, a Radio Playground, here on Fresh Air Radio.
Support for KFAI comes from the Cedar Cultural Center, presenting Fronder, Saturday, January 24th. Fronder plays modern acoustic folk music that blends Swedish and Estonian traditions. Their latest release, Fronder 2, pushes the limits of what folk can be, blending Nordic roots with the echo of classic rock energy. Fronder's gaze is on the folklore and history of their homeland, but their feet are firmly planted in the present. Opening the show is Pony Folk. More information about Fronder is available at thecedar.org.
In recognition of the freedom of speech protections on the First Amendment and the FCC's relaxed policy on late night and overnight language, this KFAI program may include song lyrics that some listeners might find objectionable. Listener discretion is advised.
You can't always get what you want, but you try sometimes. You get what you need.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, 90.3 FM Minneapolis, going out to the stratosphere, or on the web at www.kfai.org, or catch this train wreck for the next 2 weeks. It's archived. This is Abby's Room for One Radio. You're at the end of your week, or the beginning of the next one, or somewhere in the middle, because our work weeks never end, but rock, well, that never dies. Here's some stuff.
She hasn't got a heart and she hasn't got a soul. Said that she has got the hell of one. A lover and believer, but I never could retrieve her. If he had to believe her right now. But when the time has come to go, I truly lost my dad. I'm all for it, going to and growing. Oh, oh, oh. There's only room for one. There's only room for one. There's only room for one. And it's always her. And yeah, it's always her. Oh.
only room for one. There's only room for one. And it's only